listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Check out this headline. Just looking at it, marriage is up, abortion is down, divorce is down. You guys, praise be to God, this is a real headline. But it's not here in the United States, it's in Hungary. The Hungarian family policy has become increasingly more favorable toward family and even marrying young.
Yeah, I love that. So yeah, Hungary took a look at what's happening basically in the entire Western world. We see that our populations are aging and people are not having babies. They're not getting married. Mm-hmm. And you know, you got some populations like Japan, for instance, they're on an extinction route at this point. If they continue where they're at, Hungary said, well, gosh, we got to do something about it. And so they started creating policies that supported and encouraged marriage. And they're seeing they're actually seeing the trends change.
In 7 years. So when we're talking about the statistics here, we're looking at 2010 to 2017. What they saw is that the abortion numbers, more than a third, they went down. Back in 2010, there were over 40,000 abortions taking place. 2017, praise be to Jesus, only 28,500. That is a huge difference. Over 12,000 fewer abortions were taking place in that country.
Yeah, because what they did was they, rather than subsidizing living in poverty, essentially, right? What they did is they said, let's subsidize marriage. Mm-hmm. Let's give people a reason to have kids. And if they're in a situation where they find themselves not able to support kids, let's give them tax breaks to make that possible.
Yeah. So things like maternity support, paid child care leave, family tax benefits, and housing allowances. They're even allowing tax allowances that encourage younger people to marry. So it's a tax incentive. You know, it's easier to be married maybe when you're younger, and not that you should be getting married for the sake of a tax incentive, but I can tell you today, living in Southern California, taxes are expensive enough as it is. Trying even the idea of bringing two incomes, you know, there are a lot of challenges where people are delaying marriage today because financially it legitimately does not make sense at times.
Yeah, I can tell you, we had a baby on December 30th of last year. And we were doing our taxes, and my accountant initially forgot to add the baby, and we owed money. And then he was like, oh, no, wait, you guys had the baby. We got money back. That's a good thing. Does that make sense? So policies that encourage that, yeah, that absolutely makes a difference. Did we have the baby to get the tax break? No. Do we hate the tax break? Absolutely not.
Well, and look at the numbers. Divorce has also gone down. I mean, talk about pro-family, pro-life, pro-marriage. The divorce has gone down from over 23,000, almost 24,000 in 2010, to just middle 18,000. That's 5,000 fewer divorces taking place. That is a very, very good piece of news for children. Think about that. Children who will see their parents staying together.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. It's not funny, but we tend to downplay the traumatic effects of divorce on the life of a child, mm-hmm. right? In our culture, we've made it all good. It's fine. Everybody gets a divorce. Ha, we have a happy divorce, or we're co-parenting. But it's traumatic. We're designed in such a way that you have a mom and a dad, right? And when mom leaves and marries another dad, or dad leaves and marries another mom, navigating that web of what is that? Like and it's not something that we naturally do. And you talk to adults who dealt with it, and they may say, oh yeah, we made the best of it. I turned out okay. But the majority of people aren't saying, gosh, I hope I can do that again someday. You know, they would say, I don't want that in my life.
Right. And, you know, we don't talk, like you said, about the impact on these children. I look at this, and again, that's 5,000 more couples who have stayed married than was previously taking place 7 years prior to that. And each of those children, you know, the split holidays, the missing out of those family vacations, the missing out of having both mom and dad present at the end of your day to celebrate a success. Now that kid has taken on the responsibility of balancing the parents' emotions and feelings about being together.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was having a conversation on the weekend. A young man I know, he's in his 20s, his parents split up when he was 17. And a lot of parents think like, oh, it'll be better if we wait till the kids are older to be able to be better able to handle it. That's absolutely not true. In fact, and I'm not going to argue there's a good time to get divorced. It really plays havoc on college students. I will say that, and I've seen it in the lives of people I know and love. But he's having to deal with this. His mom's getting married this year. His dad's getting married later that year, and he's expected to be at both of them and put on a happy face. Hmm. It's not a happy face. You know, and it's just not. But again, the parents don't care about the kid. It's now the kid's job to support their choices, right, and make them feel happy and good about their life choices, even though they destroyed his home.
Last summer, a book came out called The Primal Loss, and it's the subtitle is The Now Adult Children of Divorce Speak Up. And so what it is this book by Layla Miller, and I'm just going to put a little plug here before I talk about it. Layla Miller is going to be at Vox Vitae this summer in Los Angeles. Myself, Patrick Coffin, Doug Barry, Pam Stenzel will be a number of the speakers there. We're going to have a daytime period for teenagers, educating them on Catholic apologetics, pro-life, chastity education, their voice matters, speaking up. It's going to be a great camp for teens, and then also a speaker series for adults in the evenings. And she's one of the speakers. But what she came to find out, Chris, was that she started doing some social media posts and found out that adults were speaking about the pain they experienced today after having had their parents split up when they were teenagers, when they were young children, and how they feel like they can't talk about it because it's going to impact those parents who were divorced.
Yeah, it's terrible. And so the Hungry is taking these steps to stabilize marriage, to support marriage is great. You know, one of the stats I saw here I thought was really interesting is they had a 63.8 increase since 2010 in the net average earnings of Hungarian families.
Can you repeat that again? Because that's a huge increase.
Yeah, 63.8% the net earnings have gone up. And largely that's because of tax breaks, because again, this is Europe. This is more of a socialized system. So the taxes are astronomical compared to what we as people in the United States might consider. But could you imagine having 63% more money?
Within a 7-year time frame. Just Ooh. 7 years, you guys. This is a game changer. I mean, I've seen the impact that finances can have on a marriage, right?
The stress of that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is something that we need to talk more about. And essentially, this presentation ended up taking place in Rome over the last couple of weeks, talking about how when we have laws that are friendly, right? Not even necessarily favorable toward marriage, but friendly toward marriage, it helps to create an environment that supports marriage, right? And we need to build that up in our culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And so things, again, this is why when we talk about things like tax breaks, when we talk about a joint filing and making that favorable for people, what we're doing is you're not saying, oh, you're special. You know, what you're saying is we want to stabilize our society because mm-hmm. we know that marriage creates a more stable society. When we give things like a mortgage break, you know, a mortgage credit on your taxes, what is that? Well, you're saying you're providing, making it easier for families to have a home to be in and an invested place to care about their community. Like all of these policies, they're not just giveaways. I mean, or they shouldn't be just giveaways. They should be intentionally thought out ways to support things like marriage that stabilize our society.
I think that that's a theme of today's show. What can we do to support family, to support life, to support marriages? You know, all of our topics talk about disciplining children and the challenges that teachers are speaking up about and how it's making it difficult to educate children when they're not even being disciplined as they need to be. And discipline's a part of love because it helps to grow us.
Absolutely.
It would be like me never telling someone, a dear friend, when something's wrong that's harming themselves or others, right? It is the same thing with your children. Just for some reason, because we think they're cute and wonderful and the sun shines out of everywhere, that we should never discipline them and give them anything they want. And we're going to be talking about how, man, Chris, the whole morality of America has changed on pornography. Americans are increasingly more okay with pornography in many groups. We'll be talking a little bit more about that on the show a little later. But this Hungarian family policy, we can't emphasize enough how, you know, the government might be making this, these little bit of changes, but maybe you and your own family can help make changes for the young people around you. And the smart decisions they're making with student loans, with debt they may have, or even training them on better financial literacy classes.
Oh, or even getting away from this American mindset that we have to have your nuclear family and you've got to go do this, get in your own little house. And, you know, I've seen, I actually know numerous couples who got married young. And they moved in with their in-laws, right? And so, again, sorry, I can think of a couple right now where their in-laws converted the garage, they made it an apartment suite for this young couple to get started in, so they wouldn't have the stress of trying to pay rent while they're trying to save up for mortgage. They contribute to the house, you know, through various different ways. But in this one house I'm thinking of in particular, they've got three generations. They got grandma living in a little house they built on the side of their, like off their house, like a little apartment. And then they got the young family in the garage with grandkids. And then there's, you know, and that used to be the way we thought about things. We didn't used to think, oh, well, you can't get married until you completely support your blah, blah, blah. We used to think, no, we're raising up the next generation. You know, my wife and I, we took about 6 months where we were in my parents' kind of basement. It's a furnished basement, as we were transitioning from one job to the next, right? And had we not had that, it would have been an incredible strain on us at a point when we just had a baby. We were just getting married. We just transitioned jobs. But because of that, what happened was, my kids are so close to their grandparents right now. My wife is so close to my parents because of that now. How can we as people, not just the government, but how we can families get away from this idea of everybody has to do it on their own and start saying, how can we support and lift up these young families?
Right. And recognize that maybe people are trying to figure it out on their own. They're working through those challenges and give ideas, like present ideas. And, you know, always having boundaries as well. But there are a lot of people today who would like to get married or would like to meet someone who are still searching.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So the last couple of weeks, we've been talking a little bit about some of the challenges with raising kids and disciplinary issues. Well, it happened to be right when we got off of air the other day.
Right.
You sent over this article, Chris, and it was one teacher who ended up sharing her story about how she just ended her year of teaching middle school. And she said she's looking at the mirror in the mirror and realizing she is more exhausted and frustrated than ever before.
Yeah, you know, I think it's so easy as a parent to swing so far into the I'm an advocate for my child place that we become unrealistic about that child, right? And so we're so busy to defend our young that we forget, wait, this teacher isn't the enemy. Most of the time, the person in that room is really trying to educate your child. They're a partner in that.
Right. Well, and I think some teachers have become jaded, but this teacher hasn't become jaded to the children. She's jaded with how the children are not being disciplined. Essentially, Erin Axon ended up posting this opinion piece on Fox, and it's an open letter she put on Facebook, basically to parents talking about, here's the issue, here are five or so ways that you could help change what's happening. But it comes down to stop bizarrely and leniently continuing to hold this attitude toward disciplining your children that's making it difficult in the classroom, such as things like maybe, you know, they had ramifications for something they did wrong and the parent just tells the kid to ignore it. And I actually know people today, right, young adults today, whose parents didn't care when they had, you know, some sort of penalty at school and just told them, no, don't show up for detention or don't do this. Like, who cares?
Yeah, you know, I was at an eighth grade promotion, which is kind of a silly thing in the first place, but we were there because we love our kids. But the principal got up and he very respectfully said, hey, we have a lot of kids today. We're going to be announcing every name. So please hold your applause until the end. Right. And not a very hard thing to do. And for the most part, people did. But then every now and then you just hear the air horn or the and a friend I'm standing next to goes, yeah, you know where the discipline problems are right there. Right. It's the parents who are just witnessing their kids blow them off. Mm-hmm. Blow them off. We're more important than the rules. No, it doesn't apply to you, you know?
Ignore authority.
And
you guys, the problem with this is this radically goes against a Christian worldview, right? This idea of obedience. You read even a lot in the New Testament about this idea of obedience, the idea of being a little child, right? Jesus talks often about little children. Well, what's so special about little children? They're dependent. They look up to, they rely on, they're meant to follow the rules or be guided in them. This is a part of our faith journey that all of us should be, you know, little Christ, like Christ, following the will of the Father. But those children are never going to learn that in personal life and will have a difficult time in their faith life as well as a result.
Right. And I think one of the things we're finding with, you know, as kids are getting older, we've got Gen Z, we have millennials in the workplace, all that, is that kids have not been allowed to fail. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is when they get reprimanded at work or a project isn't received or it's returned or their editor says, no, we got to do this over again, whatever it is, they crumble. They can't take it. It's like, oh my gosh, it's the end of the world. Oh, this is terrible. They hate me. How could they do that? Like, no, well, you just didn't get your reward for doing bad work, right? You had to do it over again. Or you lost your job because you just didn't get here. You didn't show up. Or when you did, you spent the day on Twitter, right? And mm-hmm. so there's that idea of teach your kids that failure sucks by letting them fail so that they learn to achieve.
Well, and that's what one of the things the teacher asks. She says, you know, maybe they got a bad grade. Don't just come in negotiating for that 90% instead of an 88. You know, maybe this is what your kid deserved, and maybe it's good for your kid to learn to work harder rather than you stepping right in, right? Or maybe, for example, they need to know, like you said, that they've just failed at times and they've got to work harder. And we do fail at life. There are things where even projects we work on, right, where they don't go off so well and we have to change trajectories a little bit or to completely dump it.
Oh, yeah. Or it's a conversation I've had with our kids. You know what? I know that you don't click with this teacher, but you're going to have to learn to work with them because there are going to be a lot of people in life who don't communicate the way you like, or they don't see the world the way you see, who aren't going to appreciate if you doodle in the margins or whatever it is. Then you have to learn to adapt because you have to be able to succeed. And the reality is you get a job, you don't start as the boss. Right. And so you have to learn how to work. And, you know, taking college courses, like, you know, you have to learn how to write a paper for that professor. Right. And does you no good to go, well, this is the way I write. And this is just the way I like to express myself. Well, great. This is the way I like to give Fs. Right. Like that's the way it works. Like, and so it's not all your pretty little princess castle. Right.
Yeah. I think it's a matter of learning to be diplomatic, right? So maybe the professor likes a certain way of writing, right? So you're not just catering to them, but you're working diplomatically to achieve the essential paper, right? To achieve learning something, but also to work to get the grade you need to move forward. Not that you're compromising, right? But you're working to recognize different people, different personalities, different ways of maybe disciplining as well. And she's saying there's no discipline taking place, or there's an override of discipline taking place.
Yeah, I just had a conversation with a principal. I'm going out to do a parenting in the internet age workshop, and I was talking with the principal, and it's such a frustration for him. And he's a guy at a Catholic school, really nice guy, really cares about the students, but trying to get parents on board with the fact that all of this stuff that everybody else has, by giving it to your kids, you're not helping them, you're hurting them,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's, we set boundaries so that we can raise healthy kids within those boundaries. And I always like to use this example of, you know, most of us understand you don't hand a 16-year-old the car keys and say, all right, you're 16, here you go. What we do is we ride along with them. We create boundaries on that. And so the first time they get in and they drive the car, you drive around a parking lot or something, right? And then the second time you drive around and you let them do the turn out of the parking lot and come right back in, right? But you gradually give over that control of their lives. That's what discipline is in the life of a student. You're teaching them how to responsibly handle and have access to their own lives.
And this is something that we talked about on an earlier show, how giving them that responsibility helps them to learn, giving them a little bit of responsibility at a time. And maybe that's a responsibility of their grades. And when they receive a punishment from a teacher, they take it, even if maybe it seems unfair. I know this is one when we think something's unfair, and maybe it is. Life isn't always fair. You're sometimes not going to get the job you maybe know you deserve, right? Or maybe someone better came in and got it. Or maybe you're not going to do as well on a project as you thought you would. You know, life happens.
Right. Well, and we all know this. The $100 I earned is more valuable to me than the $100 that was given to me.
Mm.
Right? And the A that I earned is more valuable to me than the A that I was dragged to. So the idea of like schoolwork, well, yeah, let your kid work for a B. Right? Let him work for a B. Well, maybe he's not getting an A plus. Yeah, but you didn't hold his hand. He got a B.
What I find interesting, so I work a lot with teachers, both in speaking and also in the Pilates area. The hours that I teach, I have a lot of teachers. It's like their prime time. So I get to hear their conversations before, after. And I will tell you something, teachers like to talk. So they tried to talk through my entire class. It is the challenge of having teachers. But one of the things I notice in talking to them, we'll hear different things in the news that come out. And I'll say, well, how do you handle this as a teacher? Is that challenging? She said, you know what? So between, you know, the high number of divorces, lack of parents around, it's hard. You kind of just have to do what you can and forget about the parent because the parents aren't willing to help us anymore. And it's not surprising when you now look at the statistics and we're seeing that the average new teacher only makes it 4 years before calling it quits. And seasoned teachers who've been teaching for years are saying it's gotten so bad, they're just retiring early or changing fields if they can. Or I know some who have said, I'll just be a librarian now at the school to get away from teaching.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and again, California's a little bit different. Teachers have a pretty good situation in California. Pay isn't super high, but it's, you know, they got union protections, all those things. To make someone walk away from a deal where they basically have a guaranteed job for 20 plus years, they retire with benefits, and they get the summers off, it's got to be pretty bad.
I'm going to push back just because I have a number of friends who are teachers. I don't think that teaching is as easy as some people think, and I think it's a lot longer hours. Most of my teacher friends are working 12-hour days at least.
Right. Well, they're okay, let me put it this way. They're doing that because they're conscientious teachers. If they wanted to dial it in, they could.
I suppose you're also still on your feet the whole time. I think some people maybe do, but most teachers I know are truly working long and very, very exhausting days.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things, though, that in talking about this with kids, working more to help them, seeing a sense of responsibility, helping them to take on the punishments that they have, working with them to see why their grades matter. I think sometimes one of the difficult things is the kids don't understand the point of school.
Oh, absolutely. We've made school about jumping through these little hoops, getting the A, rather than about learning. You know, I say this to my son all the time. The object is not to complete the assignment. The object is to learn the material, right? It doesn't matter that you completed the assignment. Did you learn what you were doing?
You know, and I think one of the things we see is with teachers, a lot of teachers do want to help teach your kids manners, want to help teach your kids how to cooperate and interact with other individuals. But they're having a hard time doing that, again, when they're being overridden. And I think a lot of these teachers have really good intentions with the kids. Not everyone, but a lot of them do. And so looking at how are we disciplining, how are we interacting at home with these kids, do we say no? Do your kids know the words no, you know?
Oh, yeah. And again, it's not your teacher's job to teach your kid manners. It's your job. You know, our local school district just came out and said, well, we're getting rid of dress code because we're just tired of fighting with parents, essentially. And I'm like, good grief, that's where we're at? And I was at the 8th grade promotion. I mentioned that. And I got to tell you, there were some kids there dressed, and you're like, what did you get dressed for? They're like, this is not an occasion to wear your pajamas to.
You're going
to
hear more on Trending. We'll be talking about pornography and sexting coming up. You really need to hear this.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
You know, if I, right now I'm just going to say the word pornography, and I think most of the people listening, as I say pornography, just covered their kids' ears, right? Because we know that porn is wrong, right? And I don't think any civilized person, or I think most people listening to this station at least, are going to agree that pornography is wrong. Pornography is something that's detrimental. Pornography is something that denies the dignity of the people watching it and of the people performing in it, if that's even the right term, being abused by it. That's why this new study that's out is so disturbing, right?
Well, I'm going to start with the good news. So hold on to your seats. For married couples, there's been a reduction in the number of people who think that pornography is okay. The approval rating for pornography among married couples has gone down by 2%, from 37% of married couples to 35%. So Grant, that's still a lot of people who are okay with it. But the fact that I think overall, most people are recognizing pornography hurts my marriage. And we need to do something about that.
Yeah, well, I think it's no great surprise that people who are actually interacting with a member of the opposite sex on a regular basis, they get the fact that this is degrading,
yeah.
Right? Because,
mm-hmm.
Again, no one wants to be held up against this, right? And it's a destructive thing. But yeah, married people, for the most part, think porn is wrong, 37% or what you know, think it's okay, which is bizarre. And I think the question is, I'd love to follow those people and see how long they're actually married for.
I think it's unbelievable that so many people are okay with it. But what we need to look at overall, you guys, my question is, and I'm going to throw this out there to you. I would love to hear your guys' thoughts, whether it's Facebook, YouTube, commenting on Twitter. Why do you think this public perception of porn has changed? We've gone from in 2017, 1 year, there was a 36% of Americans thought that pornography was okay. Guess what, you guys? That has jumped up to 43%. We're almost to the point where half of Americans are okay with pornography.
Yeah, that is just so weird. I mean, so if you're standing a group of 10 people, at least four of them are good with porn. And that's what it kind of comes down to, right? You look at that. So you're standing in a group of 10 people. Four of those people think porn is just okay. And when you look at how that breaks down with people of faith versus people who are not people of faith, it's even weirder. I mean, so I'm looking for that statistic. I think it was 75% of those who say religion is not important view porn as morally acceptable, right? So that means if your daughter is decided she wants to date somebody but is not a churchgoer, 75% of those people think that porn is okay.
And, you know, a vast majority of believers, unfortunately, are looking at pornography and are somewhat okay with it because we begin to justify. And this is what's killing me. You know, Chris, I have to say, as a woman on the receiving side of disrespectful leers, disrespectful gazes, it has gotten worse. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, not that I'm old at all, but I've gotten older and it's just continued to get worse, right? I probably dress more modestly now than I did before. And it just continues to get worse. And I think because men are left unchecked today, this idea that I can just stare people up and down and hone in on different body parts, I see it all the time. And it is so degrading and disrespectful. And I'm not making excuses, but I know in my head, well, they probably look at pornography. They have no self-control. I am making pretty darn safe assumptions that that person looks at porn.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned that people of faith are looking at it, and that is true. I mean, statistically, we definitely see that people, even people of faith, are trapped in the snare of pornography, but only 22% of them would say that's okay.
Right.
And I think that's important. That's an important distinction. So you got 75% of people who say religion isn't important say it's that porn is great. It's fine. There's no problem with it, right? So 75%, essentially of unbelievers, say that porn is okay. They're like, it's a moral neutral, right? That's crazy.
You know, I look at this and I just keep asking, what has gone wrong? And we were talking about this before the show started because I'm just saying, what's happened? What has changed from 2017 to 2018 that there's this massive jump in approval for pornography, whether you're unmarried, whether you're an 18-year-old young man or a 50-year-old man? Like, it continues to increase. And I think, number one, it's consistent exposure. You mentioned before that it's constant access as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that consistent exposure isn't just in the fact that it just happens, we stumble upon it all the time, but the fact that this is normal. This is a new normal in TV today.
Yeah, I mean, think about Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man, great movie. But there's that one stupid moment where his buddy is in the computer lab kind of assisting him as the guy on the computer, and a teacher catches him because it's a prom. No one's supposed to be at the computer lab. And she says, what are you doing here? He goes, looking at porn. And it's supposed to be a big laugh line. It's just not a laugh line, but that's the culture now, pornography. And I think this is the way we desensitize people things. We start making jokes about it, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember friends back in the 90s, porn became a joke. Chandler and Joey were basically porn addicts, right? And they would sit in their apartment one day because the porn channel got unscrambled and they just sat there and watched it for days. Right. And then there was another episode where Monica was dating Chandler and she decided that she'd get him porn. He was really super excited. That was like a Christmas present. Right. And they make these jokes about it. And we at that point in the culture in the 90s, that was abhorrent. Right. That was not anywhere near mainstream. But we've just been so desensitized with this constant barrage of, oh, it's a joke. Oh, it's funny. Oh, it's not that big of a deal. What should have happened on the episode, if it was true, was Monica would have found Chandler looking at porn and they would have broken up because she would have been so betrayed by that. Mm-hmm. Right. But that's the reality, but that's not the way it was portrayed.
Well, and this is what's interesting. I remember even in high school hearing tons of adults having conversations about challenges to marriages, looking at pornography. Now, back then, it wasn't as looked down upon sometimes, I think, as it is. Like, we didn't have as much knowledge of the impact of it. So I think among goodwill people, they're like, oh, yeah, they maybe make a joke about it, or yeah, he looks at porn, or maybe it was just kind of something that happened, but it was pushed aside. And it was not necessarily, like, it was wrong, but it was also like, oh, gosh, you know, the pornography. Now, today, we know the impact of it. And we know that a lot of people approve of it because there's a higher level of addiction, that there's a higher level of exposure. But what we're not talking about as well is how this is impacting young women. And I want to come to this, but here's interesting, just something to throw out there, pressing in your direction. Chris, you pulled this up. The Gallup poll also showed that 53% of Democrats see pornography as morally acceptable.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting statistic. Now, it's also on the rise amongst Republicans. There's a 20% rise amongst Democrats, 11% rise amongst Republicans as people seeing it as morally acceptable. But yeah, the majority of people who identify as a Democrat would say pornography is not a big deal.
And I'm just going to throw this out there. If we are willing to dehumanize the most innocent child in the womb, if we're willing to violently tear that child to pieces, if we're willing to advocate for that through all 9 months of a woman's pregnancy, if we're willing to expect a woman to be on hormonal contraception for the sake of pleasure, why wouldn't people be okay with looking at an image? Because to them, it's a detached image from a person.
Right. And you just devalue the human being, right? You know, I think we have to spend just a little bit of time talking about the consequences of pornography addiction, right? And we briefly touched on it, but that why porn, I mean, there's the dignity of the human being, that this is an image and likeness of the living God, right? This is something that was designed to be, sex was designed to be between a man and a woman. That's in a married relationship. There's that. But then what's being portrayed on screen is not normal marital relations, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is young people, for the most part, who are getting involved in this and they're staying addicted. And it's a multi-generational thing. Don't get me wrong. But their perception of what normal marital relations is completely false now. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening is they're getting into normal relations with a man or a woman and they're unsatisfied because it doesn't live up to this fake production that they've seen.
Well, and look at it. The images of the women can be intensely graphically modified to make the woman look skinnier, larger in certain areas. Facial features look different. I've seen the images where they'll take a woman who has a beautiful body laying there like a Barbie with no makeup on, and they cut out part of her waist, increase the size of her bum and other areas.
Sure.
And, you know, you look at it and it's not real. So the expectation's harmful. But not only that, when you're looking at pornography, different neural connections are firing. You have different reactions of, you have endorphins kicking in. You have the different chemicals in the brain like dopamine kicking in, which gives you a kick of pleasure, right? This pleasure high. Our body's reminded by the little trickle of dopamine that we need to eat. It feels good when we eat. So we receive a little bit of dopamine. Well, guess what? Dopamine's also released when you have sex. Dopamine's also released when you look at pornography. But what's happening is people are becoming addicted to a certain level of dopamine in pornography that they then want more. And something that is partially used as a survival instinct and sense of well-being, we're now chasing after it as a chemical high, essentially. So what's happening, and you know this, people are now looking for more intense forms of pornography. It started with the simple Playboy magazine. Now it's graphic images. Now it's graphic videos.
Well, and even before we get into the escalation side of this, too, the other problem is you're rerouting the brain. So it's now you've trained your brain to have this response with this artificial, you know, sex, right? The images on the screen. And what we're finding is young men and young women are now unable to engage with real people because their brains have been rewired. They don't respond, right? And so there's a growing rise male
erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, see, you always say this stuff, and I always get all timid about it.
I was just talking about this on air.
I would say ED, and ED, and this issue with young men. But we're dealing with young men who cannot rise to the occasion because their brains have been rewired, right? I will always go for the clever euphemism. That's just the way I'm going to run. You can come out and say it, but I'm gonna probably dance
around
it.
Okay, so I was actually just talking about this.
Yeah.
And with a friend, and I was saying how you have a difficult time talking about some of these same specific words, and I think it's because guys are more free usually with conversations, so now you're trying to be more careful on air.
Oh, no. Even in conversations, I will definitely use the clever euphemisms.
Really?
I try to. I enjoy them. I do.
See, so you're more willing to talk about this than I am.
Oh, yeah.
Is what I'm saying, but
yeah,
you're
maybe.
more... You're more more reserved with certain words here.
Right. But again, so this guys can't stand to attention because they have this relationship with the computer.
But you know what? We're going to come back to this in a minute. But one of the things that really breaks my heart is what's happening is men and women used to really desire and look for that person and have the vision of that person that they turn to. Now they see their spouse or their significant other and they're looking at them, but thinking about other people as well. And this is an impact of pornography.
Yeah. I mean, we're destroying marriages. We are training ourselves for infidelity. Porn is a problem and this trend has got to be reversed.
We're going to talk a little bit about some of those resources to help.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
What has happened? People are more accepting of pornography than ever before. You know, Chris, you were just highlighting that 75% of those who say religion's not important view pornography as morally acceptable.
Yeah, it's this weird, bizarro feminism that's come in, right? That it's pornography is liberating, right?
Are you blaming women?
Women are taking control of their bodies. No, I'm blaming stupidity. I think that's what I'm blaming. You hear that argument all the time. No, it's liberating for women because they're taking control of their bodies. And you're like, no, that's absolutely not what's happening, right? Their bodies are being commoditized and they're being sold for the pleasure of largely of men, right? So how is that liberating?
Well, and this is what happens when we have an abortion culture, but especially I think when we have a contracepting culture. We allow ourselves to be viewed as a means to another person's pleasure. And we begin to look at another person and objectify them, reduce them to our sexual desires. And reducing then the impact of pregnancy, reducing the fact that, oh, we have a failsafe if we get pregnant. Like, we've completely destroyed the respect and sacrifice in giving of oneself exclusively to another.
Oh, yeah. And now we're in this situation for young people who have grown up with this is what sex is supposed to be. It's supposed to be porn, right? And so you're having married couples who are having issues in their marriage because they can't have fulfilling sexual relationships because they feel like they're supposed to be performing somehow and they can't live up to those standards. And whether or not they're open about the fact that this is in their marriage or not, it's affecting their marriages.
So before we talk about the impact on young women, I want to throw out some resources. Did you have something though?
No, I just wanted to add too. I think it's super destructive for dating people too, because you have porn addicted young men and young women. And now what's expected in a relationship has changed. What's become normal in a dating relationship where, okay, young people may have been engaging in unchaste activities, but now the level of what that is and how that's supposed to be and what young women are supposed to be okay with or what young men are supposed to want has completely changed. It's shocking.
So I'm just going to practically there. Maybe you know someone or maybe you're dating someone. You need to have a conversation about pornography and you need to be willing to offer some resources, even if they aren't struggling with pornography. I will tell you, vast majority of men I know have struggled with it. And the men who I know who haven't, I'm so proud of and have so much respect for, because I get that it's difficult in today's day and age. But having that conversation, make sure to begin with, they're not struggling or haven't struggled. And if they had, they need to go through some healing for that.
It's almost impossible to not encounter it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that does it. It just is. I mean, and you know, you used to have to pay to get it. Now you've got to pay to avoid it. If you don't have some kind of filtering software on your computers, your cell phones, all of that stuff to protect you, then you're stupid. I just will say that right out there. Like, you're dumb. If you've got kids and you've given them devices, access to computers in your home or in their phones, and you don't have some type of filtering software on those devices, you're stupid. I will say that. Be insulted. I have no problem with that.
So let's help equip people. So some of the things we talk a lot on here about Covenant Eyes, it's a filtration system that you can put on all of your technical advice. I'm hitting the mic here.
Yep.
Just so passionate, putting my hands down now. But yeah, you can filter pornography from even coming onto your screens.
Yeah, and Covenant Eyes is a paid service. I think it's like $15 a month, but it covers everything. It covers your home computers. It covers your phones. Each person in the family gets their own user, so you get like an accountability report for them. Mm-hmm. I have accountability partners for myself. I've got good friends who I said, hey, I want you to monitor this. If you see I'm going someplace, call me on it, right? I get my son's accountability report, and it says, hey, we've got some issues here. And most of the time he's looking at video games, which is fine. But I know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I'm tracking it.
So what you're referring to is you can actually set up an accountability partner. And this is part of, if you are struggling with a pornography addiction, you have to have an accountability partner. Someone, you, it can be a priest, but maybe it's someone else as well that you see on a daily basis. But of course, going to confession, confessing that sin, and planning out a battle plan. So prayer is fantastic. It's an important part. Praying that rosary, turning to the Blessed Virgin Mary. But you need to be set up for success. So having that battle plan with covenant eyes, it'll actually send a message to someone you choose it to send to,
right,
so that they know, oh, hey, this person ended up looking at pornography, and it opens the door for two things. One, you know, that person I care about knows what I did. Two, that person has the opportunity to enter in and intervene.
Well, and the great thing, I would say even better than having that on your phone. I mean, I have that stuff on your thing, but when you're feeling like you're struggling, like when you're feeling like I'm going to fall, text that accountability partner. And say, hey, I'm struggling right now. I need your prayer. Is that embarrassing? Sure. Would you rather be embarrassed than unhealthy? I hope so. I mean, and is it embarrassing? I don't know, because typically everybody's struggling with something, right? There's nobody out there who's not struggling with something. You're taking those steps.
So some of the other resources, sometimes people need to see more of the impact on their brain. So one of the great resources is Fight the New Drug. They have a great network for people who are struggling with pornography addiction, trying to overcome a pornography addiction. They even have an app as well. Life Teen has the Victory app, which they made with Matt Frad, who has a great story of really overcoming a pornography addiction. And he talks about the impact on the brain and how it harms us. You know, these are things we're going to be talking about at Vox Vitae Camp. I can't say it loud enough. If you have the opportunity and are in Southern California, we're hammering in the idea that pornography is so impactful. And really, if we allow that to enter in, it impacts our relationships, our friendships, our motivation, our pleasure reward system, and our brain. These things, you guys, we can't offer enough resources.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, another great free resource for your home network is called OpenDNS. And now, it's not a catch-all, but what it does is it blocks things at the server level. So, for instance, if the DNS is the address or the kind of the www.everydaycatholic, that's our DNS, right? It blocks that. So if there's like Pornhub is a nasty, nasty thing, OpenDNS will block it. It won't block open image searches, so you still need something like Covenant Eyes. But if someone's at your home and they're using your internet, OpenDNS will stop them, even if they don't have Covenant Eyes, from going to a lot of the nasty stuff that's on the web.
And it's not a matter of, oh, I have to be, you know, this person babysitting someone else all the time. It's the idea that this is something that's harmful for us. We wouldn't walk into a building where we knew that something was going to damage our soul, damage the wiring of our brain, and harm potential in current relationships. We wouldn't do it. So why would we allow these things to just be shot at us like missiles?
Oh, yeah. If two people or three people said, hey, we want to come into your house and have graphic sex in your living room, you wouldn't be like, cool, hey, why don't you go hang out in my kid's room? That'd be even better. You'd say, hey, no, get out of here. You belong in prison. Anyway, I love equipping parents to deal with this. It's one of the things I'm passionate about. I actually do parenting in the internet age workshops. I'm going out and doing that at some Catholic schools and actually at some secular schools. So if you're listening, you're like, wow, I really wish we could share this with the people in our community. I'd mm-hmm. love to come out and do that. You can get more information at everydaycatholic.com.
And same here. We're talking about porn this summer. And, you know, I think that the opportunity, a lot of people aren't willing to talk about it. And so that's why Chris and I are sitting here saying, we're talking about it. We're getting into those uncomfortable conversations. I remember last summer I was at one workshop and I just presented on pornography, and one of the men there was like, I can't get myself to talk about this stuff out loud. And I said, well, we don't have a choice. And he goes, I don't even like talking about it with my wife. And I said, I'm sorry, but this is where the kids are at. And when we talk bluntly to them about the impact on their brain, the impact on their relationships, they're listening. When they hear about the chemicals working in their heads, they are all about science.
Right.
And there's plenty of science to back this up. So parents, be equipped to be willing to invite people out who will help you understand and help you work with your kids. I want to throw one more resource out there. It's a book called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. So when I go and present, I actually present specifically on a lot of the ideas in this book of helping young children and adults understanding the difference between good pictures and bad pictures, and how we have a part of our brain that is animal-like, and we have a part of our brain that is also the ability of yes and no moral control, and how the two have to go hand in hand, and how kids kids from a young age need to understand the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of teens every year attend Steubenville conferences. I think about 60,000 teens. Last year, what we did at the conferences is we did a workshop at every single conference that was a keynote where we talked about porn and the effects on your brain and why it's bad. So you can look those up on YouTube, too. I guess what we're saying is you're not in this fight alone. There are resources. It's not you against all of this. You can set up filters on your computers. You can filter your server. You can find resources to have the conversation with your kids. You can find resources to have the conversation with the spouse. You can find things that will connect you with accountability partners. The one thing you cannot do is nothing. That is not an option anymore. You have to do something. You have to get proactive.
Mm-hmm. And why is it that we don't turn enough to our Lord in the midst of doing all the practical things that you cannot forget? You can't just turn to prayer. Prayer is fantastic. It's fundamental. But we need to turn to God and offer this to Him. God, I am struggling. I'm asking you to take this from me. I'm asking you to give me the people in my life to help make me accountable. And ladies, if you are dating someone who is looking at pornography and the relationship, you may care a lot about them. They may have great potential, but say, until you are not looking at pornography and you've healed from this, I cannot date you.
Yeah, the one sin God can't forgive is the one you won't give Him. And so if you are struggling with this, saying, oh, that's good, it's not that big a deal, I don't need any help with this, I'm fine. Yeah, well, you're not allowing grace to come into your life.
It's been a great show. We hope you guys stay in contact on social media. I would love to know your hacks for how you're working on fighting off pornography.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.